Thank you so much, Rabbi Kalman. I appreciate it. I'm going to share a screen now so you can all see the source sheet. Okay. Yeah, everybody can see it? Rabbi Kalman? Beautiful. All right. Hi, good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining me for the first of three shiurim on the topic of the Shvatim. As Rabbi Kalman just pointed out, I just wrote a book on this topic, and I hope that you will all go look and buy this book called Tribal Blueprints from Koren. But there's a reason why I specifically picked this topic. And even though, for anyone who's heard me speak before, you know that I love delving into characters and understanding their personalities and understanding their stories and the many ways to look at their stories. When it comes to the Shvatim, they are the 12 sons of Yaakov who create Am Yisrael. And therefore, really understanding them and understanding their stories is incredibly powerful. But not just because we want to understand the stories in Bereishit, the stories about them, but because what I have found is that there's a pattern. Whoever they are, and say for Bereishit, the stories they have, the personalities they have, that personality follows them throughout all of their descendants throughout the rest of Tanakh. For each one, after seeing their personality in Bereishit, we're going to see how the same storyline and the same personality follows them throughout their descendants throughout the rest of Tanakh. So for this series, we specifically chose three out of the 12 tribes because I wanted to focus on leadership. And I thought how lovely it would be to focus on the three characters. First today, Reuven, who's the Bechor, the should-be leader, the one who should have been the leader of Am Yisrael, but as we clearly will see, he was not, and we have to understand why. Then, of course, Yehuda, we will do second, because he's the strong one, the one blessed with malchut, with kingship. And then Yosef, the favorite one, who really so many of the leaders that we have throughout all of Tanakh, in Sefer Shoftim, in Sefer Malachim, they all come from Yosef. So let's start with the discussion for today, which is, of course, Reuven. If we all think about Reuven, you probably think of him in somewhat negative terms. You think of him as the screw up, the one who lost his Bechor status, the one that you kind of feel bad for. Maybe you think he's evil, maybe you don't, but you kind of feel very bad for him. So what I want to do is look at all his stories, not next to all the other brothers, but just him alone, isolate his stories to really understand the personality of Reuven. In order to do that, we always have to start from the very, very beginning here in source number one, which is the birth of Reuven. And that's something I find very, very striking because I'm sure all of you, whoever is a parent, has struggled with trying to find the right name for your child, right? You want to make sure it's a name that they will be proud of. You want to make sure that it's a name that they'll look back and say, wow, my parents thought great things of me, which is why they gave me this name. And that's why it's so striking when you get to the very beginning of Reuven and everything about Reuven is going to come from this point, which is his naming. His naming tells us about the relationship between his father and his mother, and it's really quite sad. We all know how the story begins. Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel and ends up marrying Leah. Leah has a child, source number one. Vatikra Shemo Reuven, she calls him Reuven. To some extent, even the name itself, Reu, Ben, look, Yaakov, I got a son. Pay attention to me, Yaakov. Look, I'm the one with the kid. And why does she name him Reuven? Ki amra, ki ra'a Hashem ba'ani, ki ataya venu ishi. God sees me in my torture. Maybe now my husband will love me. It is so clear from the naming of Reuven how much pain there is in the household of Leah. She wants her husband to love her, but she doesn't feel the love at all. And as we will see, and as you will see if you go through all the stories of all the Shvatim, Reuven is the most affected by this relationship. He's the oldest, so it makes sense that he would be the one who really carries the burden of his mother's pain. But in order to understand, I really need to step a little bit back and just analyze for a few minutes the relationship of Yaakov and Leah. And really, the only way to do that is by understanding the relationship of Yaakov and Rachel. There are two very different ways to look at the relationship of Yaakov and Rachel. The first one is genuine, true love. And therefore, Leah got in the way. Leah is an extra. Leah is not wanted, and Leah will never be wanted. If I look at source number two, the language of ahava, of love, is used twice about Yaakov and Rachel. Vayahav Yaakov et Rachel. He loved her, and therefore says to his future father-in-law, I will work for you for 7 years for free. Just let me marry Rachel. And then the ending here of Pasuk Chaf, I read what I bold so it's easier to follow. Those 7 years went by so fast because he loved her so much. It was like nothing to him to work for 7 years. Genuine, genuine love. Now, if that's true, Leah's going to have a very hard time. But there's a second way to look at it, which is this is the woman that he meets as he's running away. This is the woman that he encounters first. She's family. He becomes infatuated with her from the beginning. But infatuation, as we all know, is a little bit superficial. It might be able to dwindle or fade over time, leaving room for Leah. If we look a little bit closer at the language of the story or at the story itself, we can see this read in two very different ways. You see, the way that Yaakov and Rachel meet reminds me of another story, which is, of course, here in Source 3 and on, which is the meeting of Moshe and Zipporah. If I take a look at both of these stories, they have so much in common. First of all, in source number 3, we have the boy running away. Moshe's running away. Yaakov's running away because they're being chased by someone who wants to kill them. Paro wants to kill Moshe. Esav wants to kill Yaakov. And they end up by the Be'er. They end up by a well. Then what happens? While they're by the Be'er, source number 4, the girl shows up. Hinei Rachel b'tobam hatzon. And as we know in Shemos, Yitro's 7 daughters show up, but Zipporah is one of the mix. They show up at the well. Source number 5, the boy wants to impress the girl. So he does something pretty impressive. So here we have Yaakov, who's standing by the well. There's a huge rock on top of the well that normally needs many shepherds to lift up. And what does Yaakov do? Vayagel et ha'avim al pi ha'be'er, he picks up the stone to get Rachel's attention. It's like Hercules. He's able to lift the rock. He does something impressive to get her attention. Moshe as well in Shemot Perek Bet, the shepherds are normally bothering the daughters of Yitro. They normally can't come home so quickly because they have to wait till the shepherds are done taking the water. What does Moshe do? Vayar Gishum, he chases them away. Vayakam Moshe, I'm sorry, they normally chase the girls away. Vayakam Moshe, Vayoshian, Vayashket Sonan, he saves them. And in both cases, not only do they do something impressive, both Moshe and Yaakov, Vayashket Sonan, he ends up giving their own animals to drink. Wow, amazing stories. Meet at the well, do something incredible. And then the story continues very similar. The girls go home. Source number 6. Rivka runs home to her dad to tell her dad about this amazing guy that she, I'm sorry, Rachel runs home to tell her dad about this amazing guy that she met at the well. And of course, the daughters of Yitro come home and he says, why are you home so early? And they tell him about this amazing guy they met at the well. In source number 7, both fathers react the same, which is, hello, a shit up. What'd you do? Why'd you leave him at the well? So what does Lavan do? He runs out to go greet Yaakov by the El Beto and brings him home with him, as opposed to Yitro, who yells at his daughters, why'd you leave him there? Go get him. Karanalo ve'achalechem, bring him home. Source number 8, something that in our world today would be a little bit sketchy, but okay. The boy moves in. Source number 8, Moshe lives with Yitro for a while. Yaakov lives with Lavan for a while until finally, the marriage now takes place. And while this is going on, the boy works for his father-in-law. Source number 9, Yaakov becomes Lavan's shepherd. So too, Moshe is the shepherd of Yitro. And then at the very end, source number 10, the boy wants to leave. And in order to leave, he's got to trick his father-in-law a little bit. Source 10, Yaakov runs away. Kibo Reahu, he doesn't tell Lavan he's leaving. He moves a little bit of a distance and then is able to escape. And Moshe, to some extent, lies to Yitro. Oh, I just want to go back to Egypt. I just want to check up on my family. I'll be right back. Don't worry. And of course, he never comes back. It's such similar stories, the story of Yaakov and Rachel and the story of Moshe and Zipporah. However, maybe I can argue, no, Moshe and Zipporah, it's about Moshe and 7 girls. Yaakov and Rachel, it's just about Rachel. There's something very, very special about Rachel. Or maybe I could say, just like, since they're so similar, the marriage of Moshe and Zipporah seems to dwindle. It seems to be strong and then dwindles out quite a bit. He leaves her behind when he goes to Mitzrayim at some point. We never hear about her or her children. According to the Gemara, they separate at some point in time. Maybe I can also say about Rachel and Yaakov, it's strong in the beginning. He's excited because he's meeting up with family and he sees Rachel first, so he gets so excited. But maybe that dwindles over time. Maybe if Leah had been the one to come to the well that day, everything would have been different. Who knows? But let me ask it from another perspective. Something we also see which is stated about Rachel here in source number 11, about Rachel, Rachel haita yifat toar v'yifat mareh. It tells us how beautiful she was, as opposed to Leah, who really just her eyes are teary, her eyes are soft, her eyes are tender, which makes it seemingly to imply not pretty like Rachel. If I look throughout the rest of Tanakh as well, I see that many, many women are called by similar descriptions. If you look here, Sarah is called very, very beautiful, kisha yifat mareh, in source 11, Rivka v'hanara tovat mareh, and again later, he tovat mareh, he, Rachel, as we just said, Avigail, one of the wives of David, is v'isha tovat sechal, I like that, she's the one, she's also smart and pretty, v'ifat toar, Batsheva, who he ends up taking and marrying, v'isha tovat mareh ma'od, Tamar, his daughter, achot yafeh, all these women are considered very, very beautiful. If you look down on the next page, Avishag, the woman who warms David, is Nara Yafeh, and Esther herself, Nara Yifat Toar V'Tovat Mareh. And therefore, I can look at it and say, wow, this is a great group of women to be compared to. And therefore, maybe I could argue all of them. The Pasuk is not just telling us that they're physically beautiful, but the Pasuk is telling us their inner sides are beautiful. Their inner sides match their outer sides. They are beautiful in and out. These are righteous women. And therefore, Rachel is beautiful on the inside like the outside. Yaakov truly, truly loved her because she's an incredible person. Or I can look back and say one more time, let me look at all these differently because I add two more here in source number 12. Vashti is also called beautiful. And we have an entire concept in Devarim called Eisha Yifat Toar, a woman that you meet in the battle who you think is beautiful and you want to marry her. And all of a sudden you realize maybe this is superficial. We're talking about superficial beauty. And now I go back to all my stories. Sarah and Rivka specifically pointing out they're beautiful because they went to Egypt and because they went to Grar and they're scared somebody might take them because they're so beautiful. Avigail, right, is maybe the reason why Naval was attracted to her. Batsheva, who's a terrible man, and he marries Avigail first. Batsheva could be the reason why David can't, you know, control himself and takes a married woman. Tamara could be the reason why her brother rapes her. Avisag is the reason why she keeps David warm, even though he can't be with her. And Esther could be the reason why Ahasuerush chooses her. Maybe this is discussing superficial beauty and not true beauty on the inside. And therefore, I can argue it was something about Rachel that was so beautiful that attracted Yaakov in the beginning. But maybe I could argue over time it could dwindle. But let me add in one more factor. Rachel and Yaakov have a lot in common. And normally when people genuinely love each other, it's not just that they're attracted to each other. It's not just that they have a cool way that they met each other. It's not they had a cool first date. It's that they have things in common that they can talk about all the time and that what brings them together. And if I think about Yaakov and Rachel, they really do have something very important in common. First of all, who they are, what they do, what is their occupation. We know here from source 13, from a number of places, that Yaakov was a shepherd. First of all, the very beginning, when we hear about Yaakov, it calls him Ish Tam Yoshev Olalim, I'm in source 13, which even though we all know the Midrashim that it meant he sat and learned Torah, the Pshat, as Rashbam brings down, he's Ratzon, he's a shepherd. That's what he was. He was a shepherd in his father's home. And we know here in source 14, he was a shepherd in the home of Laban. So clearly by profession, he was a shepherd. Well, guess what? So was Rachel. Source 15, when she comes out with the sheep, why does she come out with the sheep? The Pasuk tells me, Kiroahi, because she was a shepherd. So here we have two people that have the same occupation. And it makes me wonder, when Yaakov came to the house of Laban, did he take over her job? Meaning, well, she was the shepherd, now he became the shepherd. Did that mean now she could sit and lounge around and she was very grateful to him? Or is it that they both were shepherding the sheep together? And now for 7 years, maybe that's why it passed so quickly. He was hanging out in the fields with her. They were talking together. They were being together in a very intimate, loving way, and therefore their relationship grew to a very, very genuine level. Another thing that they have in common, which I think is also very important to claim that their relationship is so strong, is their status within the home. If you look at source 16, it is very clear that Yaakov is not the favorite child. Yitzhak, Vayahav Yitzhak, it's Esav. Yitzhak prefers Esav to Yaakov. So too, it seems very clear, Lavan prefers Leah to Rachel. They are not the favorite child of their father. How do I know that? Well, first of all, Lavan's willing to ruin Rachel Rachel's life by marrying Yaakov off to Leah instead of Rachel. Number two, the Chizkuni points out here in Source 17, why is Rachel the shepherd and not Leah the shepherd, right? It sounds like she's always the shepherd. Kirahi, it's not like it was her turn. She's always the shepherd. So comes the Chizkuni to say something about being a shepherd, which is makes sense in Tanakh as well. Levichach lo haita ro'eh, Leah was not the shepherd. The Ode gives another explanation because of her eyes. The Ode kidei lachlo kavod l'gadola, because it wasn't the honorable position. It was the lowly position. Well, Leah's the older one. She doesn't become the shepherd. It's Rachel, the one I don't like so much. And we see that clearly as David is the shepherd in his father's home. David, the youngest, the one his father doesn't think is deserving to be shown to Shmuel to possibly be the king. Moshe becomes the shepherd in Yitro's home. You give it to the guy who's running away and says, give me food. You give it to the lowest position possible. And therefore, it seems clear Lavan did not like Rachel so much. But I'll give one more reason to assume this. Source 18 is when Lavan's trophim are stolen. And when Lavan's trophim are stolen, whatever those are, his idols or whatever type of thing that is, he chases down Yaakov. And it tells us in the Pasuk about his search. And it seems to imply, yes, he goes into the tent of Leah. Yes, he goes into the tent of Bilhah and Zilpah. But the Pasukim really incredibly describe how much he searches the tent of Rachel. It's as if he knows, you're my child who I never treated so nicely. If anyone stole it, it's of course you. And he searches and he searches and he searches. And therefore, it seems very clear, Yaakov and Rachel have something else in common. They're the non-favored child. That's a lot to talk about, which I think, therefore, is not going to be a surprise when we get to Yosef. The product of the two of them together is the favorite child. It's like they're trying to undo the curse of both of their past. And therefore, here we could possibly see Rachel and Yaakov have a very genuine relationship. They have so much in common. She's absolutely stunning on the inside and on the out. Or again, do I question that there's room for Leah? And this question comes very strong when I look at two contradictory psukim. If you look at Source 19 with me, the pasuk tells me, Vayavo gam al Rachel, when he finally marries Rachel, Vayahab gam et Rachel me Leah. He also loves Rachel more than Leah, but also seems to imply that he does love Leah. There was room in his heart for Leah. But then in the next pasuk, it tells us the opposite. Vayar Hashem ki snua Leah. God sees Leah is hated. So wait, is she loved also? Or is she hated? Which one is it? Not only that, a few psukim later, first she names Reuven, as we just said, maybe my husband will now love me, implying he didn't love her before. But then when she has her second child, which we're not going to be able to do together, but Shimon is kind of her answer. Reuven is maybe this will help having a child. Maybe my husband will love me. Second child, Kishama Hashem Kisno Anochi. Nope, didn't work. God heard I'm hated, gave me another child. Reuven didn't work for me at all. It's so incredibly negative. But what do I do with the contradiction? Was she loved? Was she not loved? I don't fully understand. And the Mefarshim asked this question and come out with different solutions. I gave you here two in Source 21, the solution of the Radak and the solution of Abarbanel. The solution of the Radak is as follows. He did love Leah. Yes, he did. But because, and if you look where I bolded Lohodia, ki gam Leah, yes, he loved her. However, aval yotera habrachel. He loved Rachel so much more. And therefore, what do I do with the fact that it says, and God knew that she was hated? God knew she felt hated. Why did she feel hated? Lo haya Yaakov soneata, he didn't really hate her. Aval haya ohevata, he loved her. Ela lefishaya ohevet Rachel yoter melea kara Leah snua. But because the difference between how much he loved Rachel and how much he loved Leah was so big, there was such a big gap between how much he loved Rachel and Leah, Leah felt hated. It was ki'ilu like she was hated because he loved Rachel so much more. As opposed to the Abarbanel, who says absolutely not. He may have loved her when he first married her, but once he married Rachel, Yaakov haya sone et Leah. He hated her. He absolutely hated her. The Abarbanel goes on to say he didn't talk to her nicely. He didn't treat her nicely. He completely and utterly hated her. Over time, he may have treated her nicely, but in the beginning, when it comes to the birth of Reuven, he absolutely hated her. Okay, with that backdrop, we now get to Reuven. Because Reuben is very, very affected by the relationship of his parents. Every single thing he does seems to be a reaction to the fact that his father either, again, doesn't love his mother or doesn't show love to his mother, and his mother feels hated. But not only that, that he's not recognized as the Bechor. He's not recognized as the favorite child. Since his mom is not the favorite mother, he is not given the status that he believes he deserves. And therefore, we start at the very beginning, the beginning Reuven story, which he's only a little child. He brings flowers to his mother. I'm here in source 23. One day, Vayilach Reuven b'mekitzir chitim v'imsad dudaim basadeh v'yaveo tamaleya imo. He brings his mother some sort of flowers. The story goes on. Rachel says, wow, that's pretty. I want those. And Leah says, I'll make a trade. I want a night with Yaakov. You get the dudaim of my son. And of course, the trade is made. Leah then gets a night with Yaakov. Now, I want to focus on Reuven here. Why is Reuven bringing his mother flowers? What is the point of the story? It's clearly an important story. It's written in the Torah. But what was Reuven thinking from his perspective? And here again, the Mefarshim come from two very different directions. There's something very significant about the flowers brought here in source 24, the Sfarno. Reuven recognizes, oh my goodness, my mother's not having children anymore. She had Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. There's been a break. She's not having kids anymore. I need to help her to have more children. It's about helping her to have children. Sfarno goes on to say these are flowers that they believe could help with fertility. He was getting involved in their bedroom. It's a little bit inappropriate, but here is Reuven getting involved. I need to help my mom to be more loved. Seems the more children she has, the more Yaakov gives her attention. I need to make sure she has more children. However, according to others, like the Ramban here in source 25, it's not about children. It's like a young boy who brings his mom flowers. How many of you? Many of you, I'm sure, your kids have brought you flowers over the years. But Nachon, says Ramban, she should enjoy her flowers. You know, she should be happy. It's a story about a boy who recognizes that his mom is sad and is bringing her flowers to cheer her up. Now he knows she has fertility issues, but he knows that she's sad. Or Radak, which is kind of a combination in source 26. And they're all saying Reuven, by the way, is between 5 and 7. You know, he's really, really young, but he's picking up on something going on in the home. And he brings flowers to his mom, says the Radak, he heard at the time, people believe this helps with fertility, even though the Radak says it clearly doesn't, because it's not Rachel who gets pregnant that night, it's Leah. And if the flowers help with fertility, it should have, since Rachel ends up with them, it should have been Rachel. But at the end of the day here, what this tells us about Reuven is something that I think is very significant. Because if he's trying to get his mom flowers to help her to get pregnant, that means he knows a lot. And if he's very young, how does he know so much? So is it that he's butting into his parents' business, spying in on their conversations? Is it possibly that Leah uses him as who she cries on and who she complains to, her oldest child, and she cries to him about the fact that she needs to have more children, her husband doesn't love her, which would again make us understand why Reuven felt a need to do something, because he knows so clearly that his mom is suffering. And that line of Sfarno, he knew his mom was sad that she didn't have children. He wants to help. That's who Reuven is. He wants to help, even if it's inappropriate, even if he gets involved in a weird way. But if it's the other one, it's a child who just sees that his mom is sad and wants to bring her flowers to cheer her up, I could look at Reuven as this very naive, sweet kid who just wants to help his mom. He sees her crying and doesn't know why, so he wants to bring her flowers. Or there's a second reason why children bring their parents flowers, and that's not just because they want to make the parent feel good, but it's about them. They want attention. And by giving their parent a present, the present makes the parent recognize them and gives them some attention. It's possible that what Reuven is experiencing is that his parents are kind of involved in their own thing. Yaakov is involved with Rachel, and Leah is so overly involved in trying to get her husband to pay attention to her. Reuven's so left out. Here, I'm the oldest kid. I'm supposed to have a special status, and no one's paying attention to me. So he gives his mom flowers. Pay attention to me, mom. Here are some flowers. How hard that must have been on Reuven when he comes back. You know, you ever find when your kids give you a card and you end up throwing it out because it's been like a year and you don't know what to do with it, and then they get devastated, why'd you throw out my card? What does he find? The flowers are in his aunt's house. Oh, his mom rejected him
giving away his flowers. So we start off with a Reuven who has the sense that something wrong is going on in the home. He's not being recognized the way he should by his father and maybe even by his mother. His mother is not being recognized by his father the way she should. And he is the type to feel, I need to do something. Even if it doesn't help, even if it's inappropriate, Reuven always feels a need to do. The second story we see of Reuven is simply just this pasuk in Source 27, which isn't really about Reuven, but it's very telling about the home, which is as follows. We fast forward to Perek Lamed Gimel, and Yaakov is returning back into Israel to encounter his brother Esav. And when he encounters his brother Esav, he tries a number of plans. And one of those plans that he finds at the end is that he splits up his family by basically the ones he is okay with Esav attacking versus the one in the back that are the most precious that he wants to protect. And if we look at Source 27, the order is just so obvious to the family. First, he puts the Shvachot, Bilhah, and Zilpah and their children. Then, Vatigash Gam Leah V'Yaldeha, Leah and her children, including Reuven, just because he's the Bechor, does not give him anything special about him. And then at the end, of course, is the precious to Yaakov, Yosef, and Rachel. It is so clear here, Rachel is the favorite wife, but it's also clear here, Yosef is being chosen over Reuven. Reuven might be the oldest, but Yosef is the oldest to Rachel, and that's all that matters to his dad. It's so obvious to him the wrong treatment that he is getting. And therefore, even though it's a shocking story, we're not so incredibly surprised that the next story of Reuven is a very rebellious story. You see, the first time he stands up to the injustice, it's like sweet, with flowers, no harm, nothing, you know, too terrible. But when he stands up the second time, it is much, much worse. Now he's an adult. Source 28, we have the famous pasuk now, we're in Brachos Lamed Hey. We're back in Eretz Yisrael. Vayelech Reuven vayishkav et Bilhah pilegesh aviv. Reuven goes, and whatever this means, and he lies with Bilhah, the pilegesh, the concubine of his father. Pasuk continues, vayishma Yisrael, Yaakov hears, vayu b'nei Yaakov shnei masar, and Yaakov has 12 sons. Now here there's a major debate. There's a major debate in the Gemara, but for time purposes, we're going to look at it inside the Mefarshim instead, which is what happened there between Reuven and Bilhah, and therefore, what does it tell me about Reuven, and what does it seem, what's he rebelling against? And I think there are two very, very different views, which gives us two different views of Reuven. View number one, which is found in Chazal, which I gave you here in Rashi, source 29, is that he did not lie with Bilhah literally, he didn't have relations with her, but rather he did something else that was inappropriate. Says Rashi, mitolsha bobel, in source 29, mishkavo, maleha katsu kilu shachva. The pasuk writes as if he lied with her, but he didn't. He just bilbil. He confused the bed of his father. And Rashi goes on to explain what's this all about. V'lama bilbil v'chalel yitzua. He says, look at the context. Right before this in the pasuk, Binyamin is born. And when Binyamin is born, Rachel dies. This is a very important point. This rebellion of Reuven occurs right after the death of Rachel. The favorite wife is gone. And now Reuven says, it's time for me to act. Why? So according to Rashi, where he mixes up the beds, whatever that means, Kishemeta Rachel, Natal Yaakov Mitaso, Shahaitanitu Natadir Ba'ol Rachel. Yaakov used to always be in the tent of Rachel. So now he's like, where do I go? I'm not going to stay here. She's dead. So he moves his bed, whatever that means, Velobishar Halim Venatsna Ba'ol Bilhah, and he decides to move his bed and his stuff into the tent of Bilhah. Oh, Reuven's very insulted for his mom. But Reuven, Vetava Elavonimo, he feels the pain of his mom. His mom is so sad. Fine, Rachel. He picks Rachel over me, but now he picks the maidservant of Rachel over me. It's insulting. Amar imachota mi hatzara lemi. Oh my gosh, the sister of my mom was an issue for my mother. I can't let the maidservant of her sister be an issue. Also, therefore, he does something. Comes along Rashi and says, where am I getting this from? Because the end of the pasuk says, Vayu b'nei Yaakov shnei masar, meaning it's still including Reuven. He's still one of the shiftei ka. How could it be if he lied with Bilhah that he would still be included in shiftei ka? Therefore, it must be he didn't lie with her, but rather he did something else. However, the issue based on Rashi, and so many of the Mefarshim try to figure this out, what does it it mean? I mean, they didn't have beds like we have. They didn't have mattresses. What does this mean? He mixed up the beds. Like, I don't even understand what that means. So I gave you two cool interpretations of Rashi. There are many, many more, but actually one is found in the Midrash, which I think Rashi is possibly hinting to this idea. The Medrash Tanchuma writes, okay, so yes, it is true. Normally Yaakov's bed was by Rachel, whatever that means. And then he moves it into the room of Bilhah, whatever that means. But you have to ask, like, it's straw. So he could just set up a straw bed in a different tent. What did Reuven do? He took the straw and he moved it out. Says the Medrash Tanchuma, asa atzmo ki'ilu yashan ba'ota mita. Reuven took a nap on the bed to show Yaakov how inappropriate that you're sleeping here, and he takes a nap on the bed. One interpretation. Let me show you a different interpretation of Rashi, which is a much more modern interpretation, but a fascinating one. Rav Yaakov Maidan in the VBM, the Virtual Beit Midrash Online, writes this fascinating article about Reuven. And here he gives a totally new read to Rashi, which, again, I don't know that it's necessarily the pshat of the text, but it shows the creativity of trying to understand what action did Reuven do. If he didn't lie with Bilhah literally, what did he actually do? So he writes as follows. I'm going to read you a bit of it. Let us apply our imagination to what happened that night. Here is Yaakov's tent in the dark of the night. Yaakov is busy elsewhere for a while, and Bilhah inside the tent is preparing herself for her husband's return, excited at the honor that she'd been given. Bilhah is no longer wearing her regular garments. She is wearing only her night clothes. It's dark outside. Everyone is asleep. No one is watching. Into the tent marches Reuven, determined, full of anger and cruelty. He grabs Bilhah, drags her or carries her off, stifling her scream with his hand. He takes her to a distant tent where he restrains her, gags her so as to keep her silent. He does not lie with her. Heaven forfend that he should defile himself with his father's concubine. His whole intention is for the sake of heaven, for the sake of justice and his mother's honor. He also does not lie with her because he hates her. Bilhah has fulfilled for his mother, even if not of her own initiative, the expression a maidservant who inherits the place of her mistress. By taking the status of favorite wife after Rachel's death, so he hates her. He has no interest in a despised woman with whom you have relations. In addition to all the above, Reuven has no time to spend on Bilhah. The moment he has finished tying her up somewhere far away, he hurries to his mother's tent. He gets Leah involved in this, which is fascinating. For it seems that she was at least partially party to his plan and accompanies her surreptitiously to Yaakov's tent, which is still empty. It is late. Yaakov returns to his tent after summoning, for the first time since Rachel's death, her replacement, Bilhah. There's no moon, and the tent is completely dark. Yaakov, with the modesty that he's always practiced, does what he does quietly, perhaps wordlessly, perhaps with whispers. He has no way of knowing, by means of either voice or appearance, who it is that is waiting for him in the bed. He draws Bilhah close to him, and she returns his affection. In the morning, behold, it's Leah. He's creating the wedding scene of Rachel and Leah all over again. A final detail in the most troubling scenario. Let us return to Reuven, dragging an unwilling Bilhah from Yaakov's tent to somewhere outside, her mouth gagged and wearing only a nightgown. We have assumed that everyone is asleep and no one sees, but this is not so. In one of the tents, a young boy is trying to calm his younger brother, a crying baby. Yosef is who he's referring to, because Rachel, his mother, has died, and Bilhah, who now raises them, has left the tent for the night without any notice of where she is going. Young Yosef is not asleep. From the entrance of his tent, he watches terror-stricken as Reuven drags Bilhah from her bed like an attacker dragging his victim, and he concludes, well, any of us would conclude in a similar situation. He also understands that ghastly night, what kind of life awaits a person with no mother to protect him, just as Bilhah has no mistress to protect her. The next day, when the plot is discovered by Yaakov, Yosef tells him what he saw and all about his fear of Reuven and the other brothers who may potentially act as he did. Perhaps the words of the verse telling us that Reuven lay with his father's concubine are not an objective reporting of the facts, but rather a fact subject to the clause in the second part of the verse, and Yaakov heard. This is how it appeared. This is what Yaakov was told. But the Torah testifies the children of Yaakov were 12. None of them committed the atrocity mentioned. So fascinating turn, but here we see really the problem, which is mixing up the beds. What does that mean? How could Reuven do something that makes his father not be able to lie with Bilhah? In this interpretation, he makes it that his father ends up being with Leah instead of Bilhah. And really, of course, the reason why he says Vayishkavet Bilhah is because that's what Yosef told his dad. So this one interpretation creates a Reuven who cares about his mom, who's mad about the fact that Yaakov is replacing Rachel with Bilhah and not his own mother, and he's fighting for the rights of his mother, does it very inappropriately. He should not get involved in his parents' bedroom life, but this is Reuven sticking up for his mother. But there's a second interpretation, which is the Pshat, source 32, found here in Radak. Vayelech Reuven halach la'ohel Bilhah v'shachav ima. He literally slept with Bilhah. What do I do with the end of the Pasuk, says Radak? No big deal. Yaakov finds out, and that's why the Pasuk says there are only 12 tribes, meaning Yaakov stopped being with all his wives at this point, and that's why there is not 13 tribes or 14 tribes, because he doesn't have any more children. It's not to say that Reuven's included, it's to say no more children were born after this point in time. Now, why would Radak say that? Well, actually, it's the pshat of the text, right? The pshat of the text, vayishkav et, normally means to lie with someone in a sexual way. I gave you here in source 32 a lot of examples, and there are many more, where it is very clear that's exactly what is going on. If you look at Bereishis Lamed, which is Leah, who actually comes out to Yaakov and says, Shachavimi or Alay Tavo, it's your night with me, Vayishkavima Balayla Hahu. And according to Chazal, Yisachar is born that night. So clearly that's what it's implying. The story of Shechem and Dina, Vayishkavata Vayishkav Otavaya Neha, he rapes her. He's clearly with her in a sexual way. Not only that, Eshet Potiphar says to Yosef, Shechvi imi, lie with me. And one more here, Vayishkav Ota, this is the story of Amnon, the son of David, who rapes his sister Tamar. Vayishkav ima, Vayishkav Ota, Vayishkav et, clearly implies a sexual relationship. Well, if this is true, that there's a sexual relationship going on between Reuven and Bilhah, now I'm really confused, because I understand he's sticking up for his mom. How does this help him in any way stick up for his mom? Unless you'll argue once he's with Bilhah, Yaakov will not be with Bilhah, and therefore he's now caused a situation where Yaakov will never be with Bilhah ever again, saving his mother. That's certainly one interpretation. But there's a second way to look at it, by looking at three more stories, which I gave here in source 34, because these three stories are actually pretty similar to a lot of extent to the action that's being done here. In source 34, I'll give you the background, there is a story after the death of Shaul being our first king, and his sons die along with him, except for his son, his youngest son, by the name Ish-Boshet. Ish-Boshet then goes on to take over the kingdom. However, Ish-Boshet's very young. So Shaul's general, who survives, his name is Avner, helps Ish-Boshet out. And what seems pretty clear is that Avner is running the kingdom, right? Avner is doing everything. Ish-Boshet's kind of a puppet. Until one day, Ish-Boshet wakes up and realizes this, and he accuses Avner in source 34, by Yomer Avner, Madua Bata Pilegashavi. Why are you having sexual relations with my father's concubine? Avner gets so mad at this accusation, he says, forget it, I'm leaving your kingdom, I'm going to David. And through this, Avner brings the other 10 tribes over to David. David becomes the Melech over all of Am Yisrael. Put that on pause for a second. Second story, source 35. This is a story of one of David's son's rebellions, which is the son of Shalom. As I said a few minutes ago, one of his sons, Amnon, his oldest son, rapes his half-sister Tamar. Now, Avshalom happens to be full brother to Tamar, meaning he has the same mother and same father. They all have the same father, which is David. And Avshalom gets really mad at his brother Amnon for raping his sister, so he kills Amnon. David gets mad at Avshalom and kicks Avshalom out. At some point, he lets Avshalom come back, and Avshalom rebels against David, actually kicks David out of his own palace. Now, when he kicks David out of his own palace, this takes us to source 35. Achitophel, who's this very wise advisor, tells Avshalom to rape the 10 concubines that David left over in the palace when he ran away, to rape them publicly on the roof. And the pasuk tells us that's exactly what he does. Put that story on hold for another second. Source 36, third story. David's other son, Adoniyahu, who's now left because Amnon is dead, Avshalom is dead, Daniel Kilav, whoever that guy is, we don't hear about. Adoniyahu says, David's old, I'm going to anoint myself as king. However, then Bathsheba quickly goes to David and says, come on, you said Shlomo was going to be king. He's my son. So David anoints Shlomo as king. Now, when David anoints Shlomo as king, Adoniyahu has to kind of run away because he had already made himself a party and he's all nervous. So he finally comes back to Bathsheba, which is Shlomo's mother, and says, I have one request. I'll step down. I won't make problems. Please, please let me marry Avishag Hashunamit. who's Avishag, the woman who used to lay with David to keep him warm. Let me marry her. And Bathsheba was like, oh, that seems to be a simple request. No problem. And she tells it to her son. Now, Shlomo's reaction is kind of crazy. I mean, his reaction is very, very harsh. He says, what? You want him to marry Avishag? Vishali lo et hamalucha? Is he asking me to give him the kingdom? And for this request, he murders him. Vayifkabo vayamot, he kills him. What do all these three stories have in common? This is not just a sexual encounter in all these three situations. When somebody sleeps with the pilegish, the concubine of the leader, that's basically them saying, I'm the next leader. When Avner has relations with Ritzbah, that's him basically saying, who's the concubine of Shaul? I'm Shaul. I'm the king. And Ishbosheth finally wakes up and says, hey, you're taking over my kingdom. I'm the king, not you. And that's why he gets so mad by this accusation. In the story of Shalom, why does he rape 10 of David's concubines? He doesn't care about these ladies. He's showing David, I'm the next king. I am taking over for you. And of course, in the story of Adoniyahu, he wants to have the concubine, or I should say the woman who lied with David, because it's his way of saying, I'm the next king. So now if I take these three stories and relate it to ours, because mind you, it's the only time in all of Chumash that Bilhah or Zilpah never is called a pilegish, is called a concubine. The entire time they're called full-fledged wives. This is the only story, because to some extent, Reuven's treating her like a concubine. What is he doing? Rachel is dead, and Yaakov is basically choosing her son as the next in line, so Reuven's grabbing it. He's grabbing the power. How do you grab the power? How do you state publicly, I am the next in line, I'm the next leader, I'm the next Yaakov? You sleep with the leader's concubine. That's what all these stories have in common. And therefore, if this is true, these two ways of understanding the story takes me to two different Reuvens, and it could be Reuven is both. Is he defending his mom? Is this about switching the beds because I'm so mad about the way Yaakov's treating my mother by replacing her with Bilhah? Or is this about me, right? Is this about my whole family? You're treating us wrong. I'm supposed to be the leader of this family, so I'm going to grab it. But again, no matter which way you look at it, Reuven's being completely inappropriate. He's not thinking this through, how his dad's going to react to what he's doing. This is not the way that you get your mother better attention. This is not the way to get you the attention. This is actually the way to get rejected by your father even further. But Reuven doesn't give up. Reuven tries again in our next story to gain his father's respect. If you look at source 37, the next time we hear about Reuven is during the story of the sale of Yosef. So if you recall, Yosef is coming towards the brothers in the field. Somebody says, it's unclear who, one of the brothers says, let's kill him. And then Reuven pipes up and says, no, let's not kill him. Source 37, Vayishma Reuven, he says, oh my God, they're going to kill him. Vayitzileh miyadam, he saves them. Vayomer lo nakenu nefesh, let's not kill him. Rather, he says, instead of killing him, hashlicho tal habor, we'll throw him into the pit. And then, you know, it's ki'ilu, like we're killing him. That's what he's saying to the brothers. But in his brain, he's saying, laman hetzilo tomi adam lashivo laviv. I'm going to go back later and I'm going to save him. So you have to ask, how does this fit into the picture of Reuven? Why is Reuven coming up with a plan to make him save Yosef? And I could see Reuven from two different perspectives. Either I could see the Reuven who's been sticking up for his mom, bringing his mom flowers. He's actually a sweet guy at the bottom of it all. He's a nice guy. And killing Yosef is just way too far. He's being selfless. Even though Yosef is his biggest competition, killing him is just not the way to go. Or I could look at him as I've been looking at him now for a while, which is he'll do anything to get his dad's attention. He'll do anything to get his dad to like him. So he's actually being very selfish. Either, as he says at the end, when he finds Yosef is not there, v'ani anani ba, what will be with me, right? Meaning I'm going to get punished. Dad's going to blame me, so I better save him. It's all about me. Or maybe I could even argue, if he comes home with Yosef, Yosef will then say to his dad, oh my God, the brothers were going to hurt me, and look who saved me. Reuven took me out of the pit. Dad, oh my gosh, Yaakov will look at Reuven in such a different way. He'll be like, oh my God, Reuven, I've misjudged you this whole time. You're really an amazing kid. He would totally get his dad to look at him differently. However, the story doesn't go the way Reuven wants it to go. He doesn't end up the hero at the end of the story because he walks away. And when he walks away, the brothers, as we know, Yehuda comes up with plan C, let's sell him. The brothers sell Yosef. Pasachav teva, Yashav, Reuven alabori, comes back to the pit and Yosef's not there and he has no idea what happened to Yosef. And if you think about it from Reuven's perspective, you want to just shake Reuven. You're trying to save someone. You're trying to help someone. You're trying to do something possibly good, even if you have some bad reasons why you want to do it. Why do you leave the pit? Protect the pit. Make sure the brothers don't change their mind. You actually see in Reuven this idea of like, the brothers will listen to me. So if I say throw them in the pit, they would never think to contradict me. I'm the leader of the family, which is clearly not true, because 2 minutes later, they listen to Yehuda. He believes it about himself. No one will change the plan, but of course they do. And all the Mefarshim here in source 38 and 39 all come to ask this, where did Reuven go? What is your problem, Reuven? If you want to be a good leader, you make sure your plan actually comes out. So they have lots of ideas. Rashi writes, maybe it was his day L'shameshes Aviv. He went to go check on his dad at that point, or he was fasting and crying because the brothers went to eat about the bad thing he did with Bilhah. Radak, source 38, he went to Roet, so no Levad, he went to go shepherd his own sheep in another corner of the field. Or Rabbi Avram ben Arambam, who says, Olafishaya nifrad mehem ba'utazman kedeli tapel belikicha tomen abor. Or he went to like figure out a way he's going to save Yosef. He went to gather stuff, maybe a rope, maybe got some people to help him. He went to go try to figure out a way to sell Yosef. And of course, just a side note, if you hold like the Rashbam that the brothers actually did not sell Yosef, the Midianim took him out of the pit and sold him to Yishmaelim, you still have to argue that Reuven left the pit unguarded enough that the Midianim could come and take Yosef out without him even noticing. And therefore, within this story as well, you see in Reuven, he wants to lead. He thinks everybody's going to listen to him, but his plans never work out. Nothing ever works his way. The ending of the stories are never the way he wants. People don't listen to him. People don't respect him. And he certainly didn't think this through. How is he going to save Yosef from that pit? It just obviously did not pan out for him. So we continue along in the Reuven stories, and you see kind of a continuation to this story, I apologize, here in source 41. We fast forward a number of years. Yosef is now second in command in Egypt. The brothers are coming down to Egypt to beg for food, and it does not go their way. Yosef calls them spies, throws them in jail, tells them they can't come back without Binyamin, keeps Shimon. And Reuven, here's his moment, be the leader, stand up and do something. And what does Reuven do? Source 41. Hello, Amarti Aleichem Lemor, Al Tachtu B'Yale, V'lo Shamatam. Didn't I tell you? Don't hurt the boy, don't hurt Yosef. You didn't listen to me. It's all your fault. Now, you go back to Perek Lamed Zayin, you're like, I didn't see those words. When did Reuven say that? So there's three possibilities. One, he never said it. And then he's just being a really annoying person. I told you so, I told you so. And the brothers are like, no, you didn't. You know, you never told us at all. Or, as the Ramban points out, he did say it, but since they didn't listen to him, it's not mentioned in the text. Or I would say, look back at the Psukim one more time. Maybe he did say it. And let me show you. You see, if I look back at the words, he first says, Vayomer lo nakenu nefesh, and then he says, Vayomer leim, throw him in the pit. So it's possible when you have a Vayomer and a Vayomer that there's a pause between the two. So first he says, Vayomer lo nakenu nefesh, don't hurt the boy. And they clearly don't listen. They're like, no, we are. And then he comes up with plan B, which is throw him in the pit. And that's what they listen to. So now here in Mitzrayim, he's saying, remember I told you the first thing I said, lo nakenu nefesh, let's not hurt him. And you didn't listen. However, on the other hand, if you think about it from a leadership perspective, yelling at them when they're in trouble, you should have listened to me back then, that's totally unproductive. That's not what a good leader does, blame everybody for their mistakes. It's thinking about how you're going to solve the problem, not thinking about how if they had listened to you in the past, things would have been better. So we continue along to the failures stories of Reuven as a leader, and we go to source 42. Now the brothers come home. And they have to tell Yaakov what happened. And Yaakov's reaction to them is interesting. No, I'm not going to let you take Binyamin down. And Reuven gets up and says, I'll be the leader. Because Reuven does. That's what he does. He steps up. I'll be the leader. But he says as follows. Don't worry, Dan. I'll take care of him. Et shnei b'nai tamidim lo avienu alecha. You could kill my two sons if I don't bring you to him. And Rashi points out, of course Yaakov says no, which he does in that pasuk. Lo yared b'ni imchem. I reject you, Reuven, once again. Because that's a really dumb thing to say, says Rashi. What? They're my grandchildren. You think it's okay? I want to kill them. Svarno points out, he says you could curse them that they'll die. That's also still terrible. So clearly Reuven doesn't think things through. I'll be the leader. I'll step up, but I don't think through the things that are coming out of my mouth. Or says Ramban, no. He said the same thing as Yehuda. It's not what he said. He's just not trustworthy. There's nothing that he's done in the past that has created a trust between him and Yaakov. Yaakov, of course, was not going to trust Reuven with his most beloved child. If I put all of these stories together, what I've created is someone who wants to lead, keeps stepping up up to lead, keeps volunteering, but all of his plans fail because he doesn't think them through, he doesn't react in appropriate ways, and nobody trusts him. And this is concluded in the bracha of Yaakov, which is clearly not a bracha to Reuven, source 46. Reuven, b'chori ata, kochi v'reishitoni, you were the first, you were the strength, you were the beginning, but it all crashed to the ground. You lost it all. Pachas kamayim, you were reckless. You don't think things through. Whatever it is, alita mishkavei avicha, you did something very inappropriate and you lost it all. Rashi points out, it's saying he lost the kahuna and he lost the malchus. He loses everything. And this is the story of Reuven. Wants to lead, doesn't know how, tries his best, and crashes and fails every time to the extent that he, for sure, is not a leader in any way in Sefer Bereishit. And this, in the next 15 minutes, I will go through where we see all the Reuven characters falling in line with all of these characteristics. They're not good leaders. They're not persistent. They blame others, but they want the power. They want it, but they don't think through how they go about trying to take it. So let's start from the very beginning. You see, Reuven is the Bechor, so therefore he does deserve some sort of elevated status, which we saw in last week's Parsha, source 47. When we count Am Yisrael, he's counted first. Why? Because Bechor Yisrael, he's the Bechor. When we give out the encampments, he has an encampment, he has a Degel, he is in charge of two other tribes, but Yehuda is the leading Degel. Yehuda is the one that we follow in the desert, and next week we will certainly go into why Yehuda is chosen. But if I'm looking for Reuven characters that fit this Reuven personality, there's not so many. The one that, of course, jumps out the pages is Datan and Aviram. If I look at source 48, I'm now in the story of Korach. Korach, who's from Levi, leads the rebellion. Datan, Aviram, and On Ben Pelet, they do not lead the rebellion. They are secondary leaders, but they're mad about the leadership of Moshe and Aaron because Reuven gets mad when they're not in charge, though they can't lead the rebellion themselves. On Ben Pelet is a no-show at his own rebellion. Maybe it's the wife, maybe it's he just overslept or didn't show up or chickened out at the end. Who knows? But On Ben Pelet doesn't even show up. Datan v'Aviram, to some extent, doesn't even seem to show up either, but they seem to be making trouble. And their trouble is very different than Korach's trouble. Korach and the other people, 250 men, are saying we should be Kohen Gadol. Datan v'Aviram seems to be striking out at Moshe and Moshe's leadership, because Reuven doesn't like when other people get to lead. And they don't even come to the rebellion itself. Vayishlach Moshe l'kro l'Datan v'Aviram. Moshe has to call out to them. He has to say, come to me. And they say, we won't come. And we poke out our eyes. We won't even come. And their argument is, Ki tishtawer len gam tishtawer, you can't lead us. You're not a ruler over us. You can't boss us around. Right? They are questioning his authority, but they have no support. The support is to Korach and rebelling about the position of Kohen Gadol and giving Ketoret. Datan v'Aviram are really on their own in this fight that they're having against Moshe. So much to the extent that the second time we encounter Datan v'Aviram, Moshe goes to their house. They're not even out in the field with the 200 men giving the Ketoret. They're home. Moshe goes to their house, tells all the people here in source 49, leave their home, move away. And they all move away. Nobody's supporting Datan v'Aviram. And all of a sudden, here comes Datan v'Aviram, and they come out of their tents, and they're kind of like, what are you going to do to us, Moshe? Right? They're questioning Moshe's authority. And I love it. The ground goes and swallows up Datan v'Aviram and all of their belongings. This is a rebellion against the authority of Moshe, done in a total inappropriate way, does not have anyone following them. And of course, therefore, it completely fails. Not only that, I gave you here in source 50, the Toldos Yitzchak, it's also found in the Abarbanel, who claim that majority of the rebellion of Korach actually came from the tribe of Reuven. Sherov Hamishim Matayim Ish Hayam Meshevet Reuven Shayah HaBachor. This was a rebellion against authority, and therefore it makes sense the tribe of Reuven would join into a rebellion against authority. But just like in the fight against Korach, we have a second time where we see Reuven rebelling against authority. But just like in the Korach story, they're not number one. As we'll see here, they're not number one either. If we fast forward to Bamidbar Lamed Bet, Reuven and Gad fight that they want to live on the other side of the Yarden. Source 51. They have a lot of Mikneh, Reuven and Gad, and they ask Moshe, can we please live on the other side? Now, Moshe gets really mad at them. And the Mefarshim try to figure out, like, if they have a lot of cattle, and this is a really nice piece of land, and we just conquered targeted. What's so bad? What's so bad about what they're doing? Look at a barbanel where I bolded. The Efshar Bezela, Tate Leruvain, the God Tamacher. There's really something else going on here. Vahu Lefisha, Haya Ruvain Bechor Yaakov. Ruvain was the Bechor. He was the oldest. Vira'asha Nitzlami Menaha Bechor, Vinitzlali Yosef, Vimachos Nitzal Yehuda. And he saw all of his power got given away. Yosef's the Bechor. Yehuda gets the leadership, gets Malchus. Vilaka Kates La Shevet Imachav. He doesn't want to live with his brothers. It's embarrassing to him. Ki harpa he lo. Sheim Shalubotzi Rimi Men, whose younger brothers should rule over him. Reuven's leaving because he can't stand the authority of others over him. He's mad that he's not the leader. If he gets to live on his own, he can be the leader of his own people on the other side. Says Ramban on this, you know what? You'd think, okay, fine, Reuven's finally stepping up to lead here, but he's not. If you look through the Pesukim, which I only gave you two, but if you look through the parak, or just believe me, only in the first pasuk does Reuven's name come before God. Every other time, it's God and then Reuven. Comes Ramban to say that's because in this rebellion too, it's God who's leading the show. Reuven just kind of tagged along to God's complaint. If you look, God had the idea. God went to Moshe, not Reuven. God's the stronger one. Reuven just said, oh, if you're asking that, that's a great idea, because then we'll join in with you and we'll live on the other side, away from everyone's authority. And you know that that's what's going on here because of the next story. When we get to Sefer Yoshua and Reuven and God, who are told ironically that they have to lead in battle, because that's so against a Reuven's personality to lead in anything, right? They get to go back to their land on the other side. And immediately, source 53, when they get to the other side, they make this Mizbeach Gadol Lemareh. And what does everybody think? All of a sudden the Jewish people gather together to wipe them out. Why? Because their assumption is the whole time Reuven was trying to create his own Am, his own nation. They were trying to be away from everyone else. So they see this Mizbeach, oh, they're making their own religion. They're leaving the Jewish people. That's their assumption. Obviously, Pinchas finds out that that is not what's going on, but you see that that's what's going on in everyone's head, why they believe Reuven moved to the other side. And it's a very tragic ending of Reuven, because as we see here, he really has no leadership role whatsoever, really almost absolutely nothing, to the extent that in the bracha that Moshe gives to all the tribes at the end, so he at least gets a bracha, and he's first, unlike Shimon, who's not even in the picture. But look at his bracha. Yechi Reuven al yamot. You should live, you shouldn't die. Ve'hi mutav mispar, and you should have a lot of people. It's like the most generic, like, you know, like, you should exist and you should have people. That's it. There's no, like, hope for the future of what you could be, potential of what you could be. You really see this terrible, terrible ending to Reuven. But there is a little bit of hope in Reuven, a little bit of good that comes out of Reuven here in our story, which is the prophet Hosea. Hosea, Chazal believes, comes from Reuven for the following reason. Source 55 tells me Hosea is Ben Be'eri, and in Divrei Hayamim it tells me a guy by the name of Be'ira, who was around the same time, is the Nasi, the priest of Reuveni, and therefore the assumption that's his father. So of course Hosea is from Reuven. Now, two things about Hosea which is interesting having to do with Reuven. Number one, one of his first prophecy is that he's supposed to marry or be with this woman who's a zonah, have children with her, which reminds me a little bit of the story of Reuven and Bilhah. But much more so is the famous prophecy that we all know, which is of course him talking about tshuva. We have in source 57 Hosea saying lechuvena shuva l'Hashem, and the famous words shuva Yisrael el Hashem Elokecha, the Jewish people should return to their God, shuvu el Hashem, which is such famous words that we read around the time of Yom Kippur. The Medrash Haggadah does something so fascinating to me, because as I said to you, the entire thesis of this year of my book is that what happens to the Shvatim and Bereishit follows through to the end. It's not my thesis. I actually think Chazal had this thesis from the very beginning. Look at this Medrash with me. Vayashav Reuven al Abor. He asks the question that I asked before. Why would Reuven leave the pit? Why would he leave Yosef unguarded? Something could happen to Yosef while he's not there. Hechan Hayah, where was he? And here's the source for what Rashi quoted. Asuk b'sato v'tanito. He was fasting. He was, you know, mourning. Shechazar b'tshuva. What was he doing? He was doing tshuva. Shefachi tzuyavi, for whatever he did to his dad and Bilhah and the bed and all that. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem said to him, Atah patachta b'tshuva? You're the first person to do tshuva? Chayecha, I swear, sheben bincha omed v'machzir et Yisrael b'tshuva. Your child in the future, Hoshea, is going to bring everyone to do tshuva. The Ezezeh, who we're talking about, Hoshea ben Beri, shamar tshuva. Where we see Chazal saying, Hoshea talks about tshuva, it must be something in Reuven's past where Reuven did tshuva. Because why would he merit to have a child who brings us to do tshuva? Only if he himself did that originally in the story of Bereishit. Everyone who comes from one of the tribes, there has to be something about them that brings us back to the original stories in Sefer Bereishit. But here's the most depressing ending, which is Reuven does lead us at the very, very end of Tanakh here, but he doesn't lead us in a good way. Divrei HaYamim tells us, which to me is the epitome of Reuven, B'nei Reuven Bechor Yisrael. This is like Reuven's story. Reuven's the oldest. He's the Bechor. Why? Ki hu HaBechor, because he was born first. But then he messes up. B'chalalei Yitzuei Aviv Natzna Bechorato L'bnei Yosef. And because he messed up again, whatever he did with his father, desecrating his father, the Bechorah was given over to Yosef ben Yisrael, lo yitchachesh Bechorah. He no longer has the rights of the Bechorah. Ki Yehuda gavar b'achav, Yehuda was stronger, Yehuda was greater, l'nagid mi menuv. He becomes the leader, b'Bechorah liYosef. Mamashir and Divrei HaYamim summing up, Reuven had it all, lost half of it to Yosef, lost half of it to Yehuda, who we're going to spend our next 2 weeks discussing. But then goes to the ending of the Reuven story. The Reuven story of Reuven and Gad, Chasi Shem and Asha on the other side, as you actually see throughout Shoftim and other stories, they get attacked first a lot of the times, and no one comes to save them because they live on the other side. Finally, in the time of Pul and then Pilneser of Ashur, they get taken into Galus first. They lead us into Galus. His first leadership roles, and it's for a very sad thing, he goes into Galus first. Why? Because the Jewish people don't come to help him. The Jewish people are busy with their own stuff on the other side of the Yarden, and they get taken into Galus first. So the very, very sad ending to Yehuda is that he does lead at the end, but he leads us into Galus, which is not a very good thing to do. And I think there's a strong message here, because Reuven, I think when I look through his stories, I don't dislike Reuven. I don't think he's evil. I think he's one of those people that tries to do what's right, tries to stand up, but always ends up, it just doesn't go his way. Always seems to go the wrong direction. And that's because he really does lack the leadership skills. He lacks everything he needs to be the leader. But you know what? He had other kochot. He had other nice things about him. He was very sweet. He was very sensitive. He was very understanding. And I always wonder if Reuven could have just let go to the fact that he was the Bechor and just understand that Yosef was going to be chosen and his mother wasn't the chosen one, like some of the other brothers, and lived his life with that status and not being upset about it or trying to fight for leadership. He could have had a very different ending. He could have had a much better life. And I think that's a message for all of us, because there are some times we want to do something, but like, that's just not who we are. And that's not the kochot, the strengths that God gave us. And sometimes you have to let go of certain dreams because you're not going to be able to achieve those. But rather, if you focus on the dreams that you have the power to do, you have the strengths to do, you have the personality to do, you have the traits to do, you will be much more successful in life. And therefore, I think the tragedy of Reuven is not his story and who he was. I think he was a wonderful person, but that he didn't recognize that he lacked those leadership qualities. He didn't have trustworthiness. He didn't have the respect of others. He wasn't thought out. He didn't have the intelligence of some of the other brothers. He didn't know how to follow things through to the end, and he didn't have people following his instruction. But all those things that I just said, those are going to be the qualities of Yehuda. Those are going to be a lot of those, the qualities of Yosef. And that's why we are going to spend the next 2 weeks focusing on leadership and the leadership of Yehuda versus the leadership of Yosef, because they have the qualities that Reuven lacked, which is why they take over the leadership position that he wasn't able to get. Thank you very, very much. And I hope we learn together next week. I don't know if there are questions. Thank I will stop the show.
Well, if you want to take a quick look at the chat box while you do that, I'll just invite everybody to join us this evening. Dr. Naomi Seidman will be starting her 3-part series on the Beis Yaakov movement, the development. She wrote the book recently on the history, Sarah Schneer and the founding of Beis Yaakov. So tonight she's going to talk on beginning Sarah Schneer between Vienna and Krakow. That's at 8:30 p.m. this evening. So I invite everybody to come and to follow the emails for all our upcoming classes, and we look forward to learning you. Like I always say, feel free to invite somebody who has not been joining the classes. You know, if everybody invites one friend, we'll double our participation. So it's a pleasure seeing everybody. And by now, Nechama, you probably had a chance to look at all the questions. So briefly, you want to
Yeah, I mean, I don't see questions here other than some fascinating comments, but it is true, and I love it. And again, in the book, it's there, but I just didn't have time, that Leah and Yaakov have a lot of similarities, especially in the way that they trick she tricks Yaakov by saying that she's Rachel, just like he tricks. But in that sense, I see why he would hate her more. You're like me in this terrible moment of my life. You know, sometimes people that are so similar to you, you actually see their flaws and you see your own flaws in them. There's another comment here that Yosef was the only child of Rachel when they met with Esav. That is true, but I'm saying it's Yaakov putting the other sons in front. I didn't say anything about Binyamin. That's true. If Binyamin was born, he would have been along with Rachel as well. And I love that point. And there are actually articles written on that, that Reuven saying that my two children will die kind of parallels the fact that Yehuda lost two children. And one might be able to argue that he loses his two children, Aaron and Onan, because he sold Yosef, or because it was his idea. And therefore he's paralleling that. But I still think it's a great idea. I still think it's a strange thing for Reuven to say that will actively kill my two sons if I lose Binyamin. Unless what he's saying is, I know that the punishment for hurting a child of Rachel is losing two sons, and I'm actively taking that upon myself. But still, Yaakov refuses him and doesn't like that idea. So these are all really...